This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is the Deep Dive. Brooke Spector is your host. That's me. And we're continuing with this morning's program with the second half. And it is a pleasure and really timely, I think, that our guest is Keith Engel, the CEO of the South Africa Institute of Taxation. And we are talking budget. Wednesday, because we're pre-recording this on Thursday at noon. On Wednesday, the Minister of Finance was supposed to deliver the budget speech and deliver the budget for South Africa, and it didn't happen. And it was a great surprise to, I suspect, the people in the galleries and the media waiting desperately to see what was going to happen, and probably thousands of accountants and even more CEOs around the country, what was going to happen. And instead, they've postponed it till, I think it's the 12th of March, which means that they have to figure out what is going to be different, because obviously there was not unanimity on what was contained in the speech and the budget itself. And I just as a parenthetical note, I'm more acquainted with the way the American government handles budgets. I mean, the president creates a budget message, which for all intents and purposes is simply a bargaining tool, because then it goes to the Congress, which then fights and bites and screams and kicks and generally has a good time with it. And it usually comes out at the end of the process looking a little different than what it went in to the process, because the president may propose, but the Congress ultimately has the power of the budget. It has the power of taxation. But South Africa is different, or at least we thought it was. The budget is proposed, and it's already a fait accompli in effect, and it's people then trying to analyze what it means. So our guest, Keith Engel, is going to help us figure out what happened and why it is the way it is and where it's going to go next. Keith, welcome. I'm so pleased to have you.
Yes, I'm pleased to be here. Look, I think you got it right. Look, before I was CEO of Sight, I was the head of legal in the Treasury on tax legislation. So in my day, I was there from the year 2000 to 2013. And the way things were done is the minister presented that budget. He had a friendly ANC, and you knew that budget is going to be adopted in whole. And they were going to happily accept it because they were all friends and they were all on the same team. So we had a process where you'd have a budget, you'd make a proposal, and then what would happen is the legislation would come out in August. And there on the legislation, it was done in such a way that we would take into a comments, and to the extent the parliamentaries had concerns, they would request we would make changes. But we controlled the legislative process all the way through. And that really has been mostly up until recently, Parliament's been a little bit more involved in the legislation. They've had, on certain special things that were important to them, but it's pretty been much a one-man show. Now, I think that's what they did here. I think the minister sat down, and I think he sat with his ANC friends. And I think what happened here was, one, the minister is no longer as powerful as he once was. So in the days that I was there with Trevor Manuel, he set that budget. He told them what that budget was going to be, not just on the tax, but the expenditure side. And he would let the president know. Now it seems very much that the expenditure side was pretty much dictated to the Minister of Finance. He said, you've got to spend this. This is how we want your spending priorities to be. And he was negotiating with the presidency on the expenditure side. And then when it came to the tax side, he turned to his team and said, look, this is the expenditure I have. Get me there. What's the least painful way to get you there? And the least painful way is the VAT. But that assumes the expenditure is assumed. And so it seems that they did not discuss with the DA. Now, again, they didn't discuss with any of the GNU, but remember the DA has a deputy minister of finance. Now, generally in my day, we never discussed budgets with the ministers, the deputy ministers. It's more of a political post. But the deputy minister of finance of the DA would certainly want to be involved in the discussions. And so they kept them out. And so now all of a sudden they were ambushed. And what you're looking at the politics was for the last number of weeks, the DA has been a wet fish. And they felt that, well, they could bully the DA once again. And I think the DA wisened up to this and realized that if they accepted a 2% VAT increase, they were politically going to be dead. And so I've never seen a budget like this. None of us had. And they thought they had it in the bag like they always did. And really, it was a mistake because once the DA said no, you know, the EFF and the MK would say absolutely no to this VAT increase. And so they've just embarrassed themselves heavily. So this was a major miscalculation on the part of the ANC. That's my view.
Let me expand on this a little bit with you, for listeners who may not have a firm grip on, well, everybody pays VAT, obviously. I mean, every time we buy anything here, you pay. There's that extra little nugget that comes out of your pocket that you didn't anticipate. But it's usually said that VAT is the most regressive form of taxation you can impose, even though it's the easiest to collect because you have all these willing co-conspirators throughout the economy that have to do it. But regressive means what precisely in layman's terms?
Well, the way it works in taxes, they're progressive and regressive. So the question is, the bottom line is we all pay more for all the goods, the rich, poor, everybody. The difference is if you're rich, you don't use all of your income on consumption. So if you're making 4 or 5 million a year, you might be spending 2 million in expenses, which is subject to VAT. But if you're only making 600 or 700,000 rand a year, all of your money is going to expenditure. So most of you, what makes it regressive is the bulk of your income goes to expenditure, and then the bulk of it is subject to this new tax. So a regressive tax in one is they're all getting hit, but it hits the poor and the middle more disproportionately because more of their income is spent on consumption, whereas the rich gets to put it in savings, and therefore that won't be hit by the VAT.
The problem, I guess, is for policymakers that although the problem is that you've set it up exactly as I understood it, that if I'm making a certain amount of money and I spend all of it all the time, that's going to hurt if it goes
Yeah.
up. But the alternative is to increase either corporate or personal income taxes or presumably possibly capital gains taxes too. And maybe some miscellaneous revenues out of tariffs or what have you. But given the nature of the economy, there are not enough people at the upper end of the spectrum to extract much more out of them through personal income taxes, either because they hide their wealth or because there simply aren't enough of them.
Yeah. Well, that's right. I think, look, if you look at the ANC, they always favor progressive taxes. So they want to hit the upper. And what happens, unfortunately, when they say they're going to hit the upper, they hit the middle and they hit the lower worker as well. So they've pushed a lot onto the income tax already. They pushed it in a lot of other sources. So those sources of revenue are pretty much tapped out. The only way they can go further is they can increase the tax base, and that's what SARS is recommending. But that takes time and that's slow. The problem for the ANC is if you look at that budget, they want to keep increasing the size of government. There's no, they might want to reallocate, but there is nothing in those budgets that show they want to shrink the size of government. They want to keep increasing the size of government, and they got to get the debt down. And given the debt situation, they got to get the debt down fast. So if you want money quick and fast, you've tapped out the corporate income tax, you've tapped out the individual income taxes and all of that. And the only one that you haven't tapped out, because you are the ANC, you don't like regressive taxes, is you haven't tapped out the VAT yet. So this was the choice, the quick money, the only way to get it in a short space of time. And also, the economists will tell you, even though the VAT is regressive, it has the least negative impact on the economy because it
Because
just
it's
affects the consumption side. And you
right.
know, generally what you don't want to do is you don't want to hit the investment side of the economy because that's
Yeah,
what's
you
hurt you
can't.
more.
I guess you can't put a VAT tax on savings, for
No.
example.
No.
I mean that you can't do it. Mathematically, it doesn't work.
No.
But the further problem for the planners was that there was really lit there, or presumably, was we don't actually have it all in front of us yet. Presumably, there was very little effort to trim government expenses, to trim salaries, to trim benefits, to trim that evergreen waste, fraud, and mismanagement, to make alternative arrangements for dealing with the parastatals, which seem to be, rather than income generators, giant furnaces in which you shove lots and lots of cash and hope for the best. So they were caught in three ways without an easy answer other than, sorry, your potatoes will cost more.
That's right. And I think that was the problem here. So it's not that the ANC, you know, the VAT was so terrible. It was that they didn't go for the other alternative. Up until now, you said, well, the ANC is in charge and the big size and the wasteful government is something we had to accept. We have to accept it, and therefore the VAT is the only way to go. Now, really what it's about is, and you can see the DA is talking now, they're saying you need to cut the expenditure side here of the budget. And to be also, it's also an act of bad faith because at the end of the day, they're showing no size in shrinking the size of government, yet they want 2% more. They told us in 2018 when they had the VAT increase, that would be the last. They're not going to go do it again. And so you see an ever expanding government. You say, well, you're going to have a 2% VAT increase now, and then you're going to have another 2% in a couple of years' time again. So you're not making any effort. And the other problem that comes in this tax is that if you look at the budget, they put all of their resources to their voters, which is the unemployed and the government parastatals. That's their vote. So the whole budget is skewed for big government and welfare distribution. And we only have those 7 million of working people, and they're tapped out. And what are they getting for it? They're not getting much. And so at the end of the day, you know, it was very easy to say, well, let me champion the working middle and the working poor. And if they didn't choose that, they would have been insane. And to be honest with you, the MK and the EFF can join right in there too. So it was not smart and thought through. And I think the problem is the ANC has been in power alone too long, and they've gotten away with too much that they really should have thought this thing through. So
Keith,
that's what.
I have to take an ad break and a commercial, and
Sure.
otherwise ICASA will be angry with us and our sponsors won't like us much either.
Yeah,
So
fair enough.
let me just break in here. This is the Deep Dive. I'm speaking with Keith Engel of the South African Institute of Taxation, and we're discussing, naturally enough, the budget, or the fact that the budget has not yet been proposed. Even though everybody was standing there, pen in hand, ready to write things down yesterday on Wednesday. So we'll be right back. And as we used to say years and years ago in radio, don't touch that dial. We'll be right back.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is the Deep Dive, and I'm Brooke Spector. And my guest today, Keith Engel, the South African Institute of Taxation, and we are talking budget. And up until we took a break, we were talking about the dilemma, or perhaps the trilemma, that the government budget planners were facing. What we haven't addressed yet, but you were leading into it a bit, was the nature of cutting expenditures to give some balance to the ship so that it isn't listing dangerously one way or the other. How difficult is it? I mean, obviously it's very difficult, but how difficult is it to arrange for actual cuts in expenditure that don't at the same time destroy whole parts of the social or societal or governmental structure? Is there a way to do this that doesn't send alarm bells in every direction? I'm mixing my metaphors, I'm sorry, but you know what I mean.
Well, look, I think, some people tease me and say, well, you're recommending a doge. Look, I think that,
Ouch.
my feeling is, look, there are times, and when I grew up in the 1980s, it was Ronald Reagan, it was Stockman. He was the evil guy who would cut the budget. You need somebody to cut the budget, but you need to cut it with a scalpel and not blunt instruments and lots of political noise. So typically what happens is if you're looking for a quick thing, you do a government freeze. That's always the number one thing. We freeze all hiring. It's sort of like it's like a symbol. Now it's not perfect government freezes. I'm not a big fan of it, but sometimes that just stops the growth. So one of the things that needed to be done was a symbol. They needed a symbol to say we're not going to keep going this way. The second thing of all is we know there's a lot of waste in government. And there's not only waste, but there's a lot of just bad ideas. There's a lot of things that people fall in love with the label and not with the substance. So what we have is we have a lot of parastatals that really aren't necessary. Now, one of the problems that we have in this government when it comes to the SOEs and the agencies is there was a little deal that was made with government many years ago, and that government is salaries are restricted. So a lot of these guys started to realize there's an incentive to become an SOE or an agency. And indeed, SARS was born that way because now that we're an agency, now not subject to the public sector limitations. Now, in the case of SARS, that's fine. But there are a lot of agencies that really should be part of government, part and parcel. And that's the problem. The second is that they're not really managing it. I mean, a good place to start is the Gordon's unit, Gordon, the public enterprises. Now, there, what you have is a parastatal is not answerable if it's, let's say it's, ESCOM, for example. ESCOM is under public enterprises, and I think it was under the Department of Energy. It should be under one department because once it's under two, there's nobody controlling it anymore. So the Department of Public Enterprise should be abolished. There's a number of political ministries that really don't make any sense. So you and now again, there's a little political how you feel about that, but they really don't make sense. So I would argue a department of sports and art, really, do you need a department for that? That can be really an agency. You can shrink those down. There's a number of departments that are just not necessary. Other things are harder. So, for example, we spend a lot of money in education, but a lot of it is simply a waste. There's a lot of educational initiatives that sound great that do nothing. And the problem is when we come to our education, we have spent it all over the place and we've rendered it ineffective. And we have to go back and say, sounds nice, but not working, and kill it. So and that's harder to do.
Yeah, one of the things I did a little digging into educational expenditures a couple of years ago, and I was startled to realize that this country spends more per capita on the basis of what it has than a country like the Netherlands or Canada, and that the country also spends more than the other leader in Africa, which is Morocco, but the output part is the killer. That you're not getting rand value for the inputs, let's put it that way.
So I mean, for instance, if you take a look at education, I mean, one of my complaints of just looking at it, when we teach kids, we give them like 9 or 10 courses and subjects. I'm like, why are you doing that? In the US, we give 5 subjects. We do math, science, English, history, and foreign language. And a lot of Americans say we don't even use that foreign language, so maybe it should be IT. And you start seeing a lot of what the problem with government is it gets lost in lots of exciting different initiatives. different labels, different things. And each initiative is not only expense on the people on the ground, but also it starts confusing and divvying up the management time. Because management now is managing this, that, and the other. So I would argue in education, you want to simplify basic education, get to the core elements of it, make it focused. That's fine. That probably won't save you a lot of money, but you'll do a lot better. Kids, you know, how many focus can they have? But the biggest problem I'm seeing is at the university level. We have a lot of these institutions like the Quality Council trade and organization that's offering apprenticeships, and then we have FACET tenders and skills development levies and these TVET colleges and these technicons. And these guys, it sounds, well, we have to have them. No, we don't, because what happens in these things is you're putting somebody through school for 2 or 3 years, and they come out and they've got a diploma and they don't have a job. Better to make sure, and the problem is why, is that they're not really ready at 18. At 18 is when you get your critical thinking skills down, not later. So a lot of these education issues sound good, but they don't lead to a job. And if a university doesn't lead to a job, it's a waste. This is a big fight in America right now. We have a lot of very expensive universities, and people say university does help you, but it does beat the debt. So sure, I'm making more money, but now I have debt to pay for the rest of my life, and does it beat that? And so I think we've gotten lost in these initiatives, but still worse in government moving back. There's a lot of regulation that we're in there, and we're just over-regulating. So those departments cost us a lot of money, and they're also slowing the economy down. And I'm not talking about BEE. I know, because look, I think this government, in order for it to survive, is to do two things. They need to see transformation, and they need to see BEE. You know, transformation, and they need to see jobs. And they should forget all the other goals. So they're all over the place. So like in their foreign policy, look, whatever you think about their foreign policy, they like America, they hate America, do they love Russia? They don't think that they shouldn't be involved. South Africa should say, we're friends with you if you give us some money. That's it. I don't care who it is. They should get out of it. But instead, they're getting involved in all sorts of political things like the DRC that really doesn't help the average South African. We're not that. What is South Africa going to be, an imperial power? It's a waste of time. Focus on serving the people. And they just too many political agendas.
Let me you brought up defense and security, and I was intrigued to discover that per soldier on the ground, you have way more generals or admirals than almost any other country on a per capita grunt basis. Something like 40 senior generals for an army that has been shrinking for years. And that clearly is a way to save some money, although in the grand scheme of things, maybe it doesn't really save lots. We don't have a whole lot of time left, but let me get your predictions on what you think is going to happen come March 12th, which is what, 3 weeks, 4 weeks away.
Well, I think it's really what will depend is how good a negotiation is. Does is if the DA is a solid negotiator, it's going to go one way. If the ANC out negotiates them again, in another. So if the ANC is successful and they out negotiate the DA, they'll probably have a VAT increase of 1%, some sort of partial compromise. Then they'll make sure that there's no marginal bracket adjustment for inflation for anybody on PIT. Maybe they'll, you know, have a few other rats and mice taxes. Then they'll cut back on some of the expenditure some, because they seem to be pushing pretty grand, and they'll be more limited in the growth. And so you'll get a muted version of what you originally had. Now, if they come out with that, I think the ANC, I think the DA has hurt itself very badly. If the DA is more forceful, what will happen is there will be no VAT increase. They will be they'll hit personal income taxes. Maybe they'll go after, maybe they'll keep wealth tax in the cards. They'll look for some quick fixes such as the fuel levy and a few things that are not as noticeable. And then Maybe they'll cut an incentive or two, and then they'll cut back more on some of they'll give up on a lot of their grander schemes, and it'll be a much narrower, bigger government growth path, and maybe they'll cut a few things there. That's kind of the range that you're going to get. But what unfortunately you're not going to have is a major turnaround. And what we really need is to get out of this paradigm that we've been in the last 10 years.
And I'm going to have to, unfortunately, I'd love to continue this, but we have other pressures that we have to move on. It's been a useful, thoughtful, incisive. This has been the Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector, and we've had two conversations today. One on a film about the Holodomor in Ukraine in the 1930s, and now on the equally complex and thoughtful and controversial question of South Africa's budget. Keith, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. It was an honor.
And next week, we'll be back with another program. We'll look at something. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but we'll be back with something which I hope will be equally interesting. This is the Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector. Have a good weekend.